This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. FCC Chairman Ajit Pai announced last week that the rules which prevent internet service providers from blocking or manipulating connection speeds to specific online content represent a failed approach to regulating the internet. Pai said the FCC will vote to roll back Obama-era net neutrality rules that require internet service providers to treat all web traffic equally. Pai, in a statement, blasted the rules as heavy-handed, utility-style regulation of internet imposed by Democrats. Pai also said that the federal government will stop micromanaging the internet. The commission will vote on the proposal at its December 14th meeting, with Republicans holding three of the FCC's five seats. The repeal is expected to pass. The move is a win for companies like Verizon, Comcast, and AT&T, which would be free of restrictions on blocking or throttling certain content or requiring websites to buy into internet fast lanes. What questions do you have about net neutrality? Are you concerned or encouraged by what is coming? Do you trust the big telecoms to do what is right for consumers and for the nation? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. Our guest this hour, we're joined by Clint Flindley. He is a writer for Wired magazine, which focuses on how emerging technologies affect culture, the economy, and politics. Luis Herstras is here. He's a professor of digital communication at the University of Texas at San Antonio. And Jacek Materna, he is a chief technology officer for Assembla, a ScaleWorks technology company based in San Antonio. Welcome, all of you. It's great to have you here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
So, Luis, you're the professor. I'm going to go to you first. What is this net neutrality?
Net neutrality is basically the principle that internet service providers can't discriminate against any type of data that flows through their network. So they can't block particular websites, or they can't slow down your connection to particular websites, or they can't offer privileged access to certain websites over others, creating slow lanes and fast lanes over the internet. Internet neutrality, net neutrality is basically the state that the internet has been at until the recent, will probably be soon to be the new state of things as per the FCC on December 14th.
People always come up with these comparisons of the internet, and you know, it's a series of tubes, and I remember we used to call it the information superhighway. So yeah. I'm going to think about it as a highway, and so suddenly someone will be in charge of the section of the highway, and they can decide how fast cargo carrying trucks can go, and if a truck is carrying cargo that they own, then they can go at a certain speed, and if not, then they can. If it's a competitor's, then they can slow them down, make them drive over potholes, mm-hmm. and maybe put them on detours, or unless they pay more money to get where they need to go at a faster speed and a more direct route. So, Clint Flindley is from Wired magazine. Is that a good comparison?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, obviously, it's a little more technologically complex than that, but that's a decent analogy. And one of the other things to remember in that case is that, you know, the providers, the trucks in this case, are already paying for access to the roads, and the consumers are already paying, you know, to receive those goods. So what's the carriers, the Comcast and Verizons of the world, are trying to do is essentially double dip on this and charge the truck to essentially depart and arrive, and then charge the consumers still, for the delivery.
The question is, though, if you're a small business operation, how do you get on that highway? There may be no on ramps for you. So let's talk about that with Jacek.
Yeah, sure. So I mean, Assembla, we're a internet software company. And, we access our services and our clients through the internet. So folks can go on the internet and go to Assembla to get our products. We pay other service providers to get onto that same highway, so to speak. We use services like Amazon's and other companies. So we're all paying to get onto this highway, and like I said, it's a level playing field, and so the highway today is neutral. There is no kind of preferential treatment to different kinds of vehicles and trucks and whatnot, and that's really created and continues to create that playing field that lets companies that are like our size, even smaller, or future companies that we may not even know exist, to be able to introduce products that, you know, us as consumers would benefit from. So, you know, I'm a big pro-consumer. Looking at it from a consumer perspective, it's ultimately one of the key conversation points around this topic.
Our phone lines are open, 210-614-8980, if you want to join in as we talk about the net neutrality. And Sean is on the line. Sean, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes. I just wanted to comment. So it's really unfortunate that this debate comes up over and over again, and the current FCC chair is saying that we should trust companies with the best interest of what is now and should be considered a vital infrastructure, the internet. You know, Wells Fargo said, trust us with your money, and then they had their violations. BP said, trust us by having safe drilling practices. Look at Deepwater Horizon. So my question and comment is, when have these major corporations ever looked out for the best interest of the consumer rather than their bottom line? And you brought up a great point. I don't know if you did it inadvertently, but you said this policy of having the internet free per se was an Obama administration policy, and the current administration, you know, has a tendency to repeal and do away with anything with a label associated with President Obama.
Okay, Sean, thank you for the call. So Clint Flinley, what about that this is a reaction to Obama, or is this just a money play by the big telecoms?
Well, I think that's spot on about basically this being a knee-jerk reaction against everything that that President Obama did, in part because, you know, the big telcos do donate a lot of money and lobby heavily in Congress, but they lobby both sides, not just the Republicans. They lobby Democrats as well. But Democrats have been heavily in favor of net neutrality, and Republicans have been heavily against, even though Republican voters in survey after survey say that they support net neutrality. So, you know, but there's broad bipartisan support among voters for net neutrality, but the politicians are sharply divided on the issue nonetheless. And, you know, so it just does seem to come down to this sort of stubborn position to just want to undo everything that the Obama administration did. And that's actually, you know, part of the problem here. Like the caller said, you know, this debate keeps happening over and over again because, you know, as the party in control changes over, they, you know, they're trying to, you know, go back and change the rules. And that creates a lot of problems for companies of all types that you depend on the internet, because they don't know what the rules are going to be 4 years down the road if the, you know, if the political winds change. So it, you know, it really is about time for Congress to step in and create some more permanent rules.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about net neutrality. We're expecting a vote at the FCC on that on December 14th and what that would mean. We're speaking with Clint Finley. He is with Wired Magazine. Also with us in the studio is Luis Herstras. He is the professor of digital communication at UTSA, and Jacek Materna. He is a chief technology officer for Assembla, which is a San Antonio-based technology company. So we're seeing that three out of the five seats on the FCC are controlled by or Republican appointees. They're considered Republican-leaning, that have that viewpoint, and that this will easily pass. So do you agree with that, Luis, that this is going to pass?
I think that the rule itself will pass. I don't think that there's anything that can be done right now to stop that. The current FCC chairman has seemed pretty impervious to attempts to influence him by the public at large and so on. So I think that it will pass, but I think that after that, you'll see a lot of litigation challenging the FCC's new rules, because that's what always happens. When the past chairman, Tom Wheeler, pushed through net neutrality regulations, the telecom companies immediately took them to court. So we're going to see the same thing, but happening from the other side, from the side of big technology companies like Facebook, Twitter, and so on. But in terms of the rules themselves passing, I don't think there's anything we can do to stop it right now.
Will they be using like a First Amendment challenge that this is a freedom of speech issue?
I think that it'll be a combination of arguments. Some of it will be free speech based, and some of it will be based on the potential and in some cases real harm that could come to their businesses from the FCC's new position, because these companies will be vulnerable to being asked to pay more for privileged access to customers, as has happened with Netflix, for example, with Verizon and Comcast. So it's already happened, and this will just give telecom companies the go-ahead to be more aggressive about these kinds of arrangements. So I think it'll be a combination of arguments, including First Amendment arguments and also arguments about the harm that will come to them as businesses.
Right. And JSIC, do you think that businesses like yours, you have a freedom of access to the marketplace, and that this would be interrupt that freedom?
Yeah, I think generally, you know, it's not a pressing concern in the sense of a short term. I mean, it's gonna follow what Luis had mentioned. It's a long term process here. It's going to be immediate litigation, as it always happens. And we'll see how that plays out. But I think if there's a longer term pattern here, that there just doesn't seem to be anything moving in a particular direction, you're going to see businesses react and make particular changes to how things are packaged or produced. And that, again, is going to impact consumers, you know, various different ways. And I think you got to look back to the statements, too, as well, on top of the First Amendment. We're going to be looking at, they're going to be arguing economic impact. So there's been over $1 trillion invested in the internet since the 1990s. One of the hidden secrets behind the drive of the economic growth in the United States has been the proliferation and launch of so many new small businesses that are usurping the larger businesses. You know, Facebook used to be small, now they're large. Twitter used to be small, now they're large. There are many Facebook and Twitters out there today that will become just as large. And that is what drives a lot of the information technology industry in this country. And it's a big part of our GDP. And I think there's going to be a whole conversation around the impact of a longer term impact of keeping an anti-net neutrality stance from an economic perspective. Because the folks in DC, they're obviously talking about stimulating growth. More jobs, more innovation, more growth. And I think there'll be an argument in that context.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go to the phone lines with Kitty. And Kitty, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I am really depressed hearing you say you don't think there's anything we can do about it right now. But as you just pointed out, our country seems to run on the pocketbook. Who cares about anybody's rights or rules? It's just the pocketbook. Who's going to make the most money, and who can get the most money first? I'm just wondering, because I'm starting a business and I'm going to have a social media footprint, and so, you know, with my, you know, three, you know, domains, is it going to go up in price because of the net neutrality issue being no longer net neutrality? And as businessmen, is there anything, I think we as people of the United States can affect change. We did it with the ACA, and we are, you know, more people have joined the ACA since they said they were going to close it than joined it before, I believe. Is there anything you guys can tell us as people with numbers behind us and power and voices behind us? Who would we contact if you say the chairman of the FCC is totally ignoring people's comments? Is there anyone else? Are there judges we can contact? Are there, you know, commissioners other than those?
Sure.
Can you think of anything that we can do as people in numbers, in large numbers, to affect change that we want?
Kitty, thank you for the call. Clint, do you think it is a foregone conclusion that net neutrality will will die on December 14th. And then is there anything that can be done about that?
Well, I agree with Luis that, you know, getting the FCC not to vote for this is, you know, it's really unlikely that they're going to change their minds about this at this point. They've kind of had their minds made up for years about this issue. But the good news is that Congress, you know, they have the authority to supersede the FCC with a bill if they can get President Trump to sign it. So, you know, at this point, I think what people can do is call their representatives, write to the representatives, go to town halls, make their voices heard on this issue, because this is ultimately going to come down to Congress.
Right. But so if this passes and becomes into play, it survives court challenges and the world we live in becomes one of these big technology telecoms deciding, oh, what's going to happen with the internet? And then is it possible that later, you know, if we change, if there's big changes in Washington, D.C., with the president and who runs the House and the Senate, that they could come back and make changes, Clint?
Yeah. I mean, if for example, there was a, you know, the Democrats just sweep 2018 and 2020 somehow.
Or anybody else. It doesn't have to be the Democrats or some other party. Who knows? Yeah.
Right. Sure. Okay. Yeah. But just for the sake of argument, the Democrats. Then you might see another change. Though there's, you know, part of what the legal challenge on the FCC to the FCC order is that, you know, the regulations have yo-yoed back and forth while during changes of political party. So if the Democrats were to take over the FCC again and try to reverse that once again, there's going to be even more, an even more prolonged court battle over that, I think. Luis might be able to speak more to that. But again, Congress has the ultimate authority over this. So that's, you know, where the action, I think, is going to be.
There are Republicans who favor keeping net neutrality as well. This is not something that really cuts along those lines, isn't it, Clint?
Well, in terms of voters, it doesn't. It's a very bipartisan issue that, you know, Republican voters favor it, according to surveys. But Republican politicians have historically opposed it. So there's been this divide between representatives and their constituents on that issue. But I think that's why representatives really need to be hearing from their constituents about this.
And Luis, we always used to hear from conservatives that we don't want the government to pick winners and losers, and keeping net neutrality is a way of doing that. Even though it's impossible to keep the government from picking winners and losers, that's what governments do. But if they really believe that, then they should be in favor of net neutrality.
Right. And in fact, there are parts of the conservative coalition that favored net neutrality. If you look at the range of organizations that favored net neutrality, that includes a Christian coalition, for example, and other conservative groups. And that partly stems from a big distrust that a lot of conservatives have on traditional media. So they see the internet as a way to circumvent traditional media. You know, websites like Breitbart, .com, for example, that now serve as alternative media sources.
An alternative fact media source.
Yeah, exactly. For conservatives, you know, would not have been possible without the open internet that we've had until what will soon be the new state of affairs after the FCC votes. So I think there's room actually here for a bipartisan grassroots coalition that could push both parties to embrace net neutrality. So if you're a conservative and you support net neutrality, my advice would be to agitate for net neutrality within conservative circles and hopefully try to even make it part of the Republican Party platform in the future, because it's really an issue that shouldn't be partisan.
So like when we have the primary coming up in March and you stay at your precinct after the polls close and you have your precinct meeting, you're allowed to bring that up as a plank and say, this is something that I think that my party, whether it be the Democrat or Republican, they're both going to be doing this, or stand up and say, and then it would survive the precinct meeting and go to the senatorial district meeting and then eventually come up to the state party meeting and say, this is what we stand for. Mm-hmm. To Kitty's question again, I want to go back to that question that she brought up. So J6, so she was talking about, I'm going to start a website to promote my business and can be for anything, you know, whether it's the jackets for kitty cats or whatever, I don't know. But should they be worried about their own little private business if in this end of net neutrality?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, generally speaking, I would say yes. I think in the short term, you know, if you're starting a business in the next, you know, 6-12 months, I don't think you're going to see, you know, there's not going to be radical sweeping impacts immediately. There's going to be a time lag here into figuring out how this plays out. But generally speaking, if you look at other countries, and I've been to these countries where net neutrality has been reversed, you look at the pattern of how the things evolve to get to that point, and you will see eventually models where, yeah, you know, there will be pricing impacts. So if you're a small business owner, one of the reasons for using the internet to start a business and to reach your clients is it's such a low barrier of entry. That's how you're able to compete if you've got a new idea, a new product, with potentially larger players, and try to get customers to use your services. So I think the short term, I don't think there's going to be a major impact in terms of deciding, should I use a particular website or build some kind of website. But eventually, like I said, there will be, you know, pricing tiers that potentially get brought into the equation. So as a business owner or someone that's starting a startup, the barrier entry is still extremely low today. It's going to change. It's hard to say how. But I don't see it as being kind of a, you know, a red flag. You know, I think everyone's going to continue, as we always do, with our plans, with your plan to, for example, start that business. But it is, like I said, it's a concerning long-term area to be tracked as anybody that would be using the internet. So
Clint, what do we call the post end of, you know, the net neutrality world? What is that? It's going to be a pay-to-play internet world. What do we call that?
Oh, I mean, I think maybe it's a little too early to give it a name, because we'll have to see how it plays out. I've just been calling it the post net neutrality world or the post neutrality world. I mean, it could end up being very much a pay-to-play type of situation, but, you know, we'll have to see what the plans end up looking like.
And if you don't pay, then you end up being in sort of like a second-class sort of internet, one that is, you see a lot of little spinning wheels waiting for things to load?
Right. Well, either you see a lot of those spinning wheels as a consumer, or kind of more likely the small businesses will have a hard time reaching consumers quickly, and the consumers of those the customers of those small businesses will be seeing those proverbial spinning wheels, and potentially opt for the options that load faster, and that's why it's such a problem for smaller companies. Though I should also say that, you know, this is going to, how much this affects small businesses is going to depend a lot on the type of business.
So it'll be a tolled internet world if net neutrality ends. What that world would look like for consumers, for national competitiveness. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Josh, we're going to get to you right when we come back from this break. We'll hear your question and your comment. If you want to call in, 210-614-8980. Net Neutrality on The Source. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Today we're talking about net neutrality. On December 14th, there will be a meeting at the FCC where it's expected that the commissioners will vote to repeal the rules that have net neutrality, and we will enter into a tolled internet world where there will be fast lanes and content can be treated differently by the internet providers based upon, you know, if it's their content, someone else's content, for any reason that they want at all. Even if they just don't like that content, they can treat it differently. How is that going to impact our world? Give us a call if you have a comment or a question, 210-614-8980. And Josh has been holding. And Josh, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I heard your other caller asking for resources in terms of what she can do in terms of being proactive. And I heard a lot of responses in regard to legally who you can lobby and petition to get to listen to the cause. But there is another option in terms of just staying out ahead of the curve technologically speaking. And the easiest way to do that is with a quality VPN provider that you trust.
What is that, a VPN?
VPN, a virtual private network. So essentially what it does is it routes your internet traffic through other people's servers, and your internet service provider can't see what it is that you're doing because all they do is connect you to the VPN network. So there is the nerds, the super nerds in Switzerland, the CERN Atom Smasher, I guess as a side project, created something called Proton Mail and Proton VPN, and they did a fantastic job with it, and so I recommend them, but there's many others available. And essentially, the way net neutrality will be enforced is by internet service providers who get paid by big corporations to create a fast lane. Well, if you are a consumer and you don't want to opt into that system, and you don't want your internet service provider to see the activity that you're using in general, and specifically for these other net neutrality issues, then you can log into your VPN service, and they see that as any other traffic. And so they can't throttle you, and they also can't speed you up. You just get whatever the neutral lane will be. And that protects both your privacy, like I said, and sort of institutes net neutrality even beyond what the internet service provider could have otherwise.
All right, Josh, thank you for that. A lot of technical information. Let me get Clint's reaction from Wired Magazine.
Yeah, so VPNs are great. I use one myself for various reasons, partially to protect privacy. Though there's some potential downsides to that. So in a non-neutral net world, ISPs could potentially just block VPNs so that you couldn't use VPNs, or they could deliberately slow down VPN traffic or, particular traffic on particular VPNs. So it's not a cure-all in that regard. And they can also be, for one thing, most of them charge money, so that's an additional fee that you have to pay in order to use it on top of what you already pay for the internet. And, sometimes you have to turn them on and off to access websites because, sites or services either intentionally block VPNs or unintentionally block them. So Netflix deliberately blocks VPNs because people were using VPNs to watch content and up from other countries that was supposed to be restricted regionally. And then sometimes sites will just accidentally block them. Craigslist is an example of a site that sometimes I have trouble visiting from my VPN.
But that brings up this interesting point about the nature of the internet. So the internet, Verizon and AT&T, Comcast, they don't actually own the internet. They only own, I guess, the part that connects to my house.
Right, yeah, sort of the
last mile
connection.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe there could be innovation that would be coming down the line that would, make that last mile more accessible without having to go through these types of guys.
That market is just so non-competitive right now.
It's a monopoly.
Internet, market. Yeah, it's a monopoly or duopoly.
Regional monopolies. So what about the let's go to another caller. This is Kathy. And Kathy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Hey, Kathy.
Yes. Thank you. I guess I was just calling to express my frustration. It just seems like, NPR has done extensive reporting on this net neutrality the last 2-3 years, and we've discussed it across the country just endlessly. And I just feel like we're reliving, history. We're not supposed to be reliving it within a year. If this all gets turned over, it's going to take forever for us to get this consumer protection again. It's just really irritating and frustrating. All the work that's been done is just going to get turned over in one vote, and nobody is listening to us consumers.
All right, Kathy, thank you for calling in. Yeah, this is deja vu all over again because we had this before. One of the arguments that the FCC chairman, Ajit Pai, is making in favor of removal of net neutrality is that It has hurt investment in the internet. And so I want to go to Luis Hersta about that. He's a professor of digital communications at University of Texas at San Antonio. Luis?
Well, the problem with the argument that the chairman makes is that the telecom companies are saying one thing to the FCC, one thing to their regulators, and then something completely different to their investors. So they're saying to the FCC that the new net neutrality rules have stalled investment in broadband, but then in a recent report to its investors, AT&T says that we're investing aggressively, and I'm reading verbatim, we're investing aggressively in the network architecture that is going to give us a competitive advantage in cost. So which one is it? You know, is it either net neutrality rules are hindering investment, or AT&T feels confident enough that they're investing aggressively? So the telecom companies are really sort of talking out of both sides of their mouth on this particular argument.
And Jacek, you're in the industry. Have you seen slowdowns in investments?
No, I mean, and that's kind of the whole myth versus fact argument here is, you know, there are a lot of things happening in the telecom space, have a broad set of experience in that, selling into that space. And so the story here is that, you know, investment has been growing and continues to grow. It's just shifting from different locations in the network. So, you know, as the providers have to adapt to this world where the Netflixes of the world and HBOs and whatnot own more and more of the revenue pie, which used to be owned by the carriers, they're having to innovate and invest in pieces of their network that are going to enable them to save costs and deliver different kinds of services. So when you look at the data, and I encourage everyone to look at the data, it's out there on the public internet in various flavors, you look at increased spending, it's actually been before the net neutrality and then after, because the internet is growing. Businesses are coming online onto the cloud, onto the internet, so there is a constant growth. And all that's really happening is there's a shift. Things are moving from wired to wireless investments. You've got some dips in investment by the larger players in certain regions. And the reason for that is really because you've got smaller players, more competitive players, smaller internet service providers that are out innovating the larger players, and they're investing heavily in regions where they can win. So, you know, the marketplace is working as it should. The smaller guys are finding ways to compete with the larger AT&Ts. And as a whole, though, the industry is increasing spending.
Clint, do you see that at Wired Magazine, issues about investments?
Yeah, I mean, what Luis said is spot on, that, you know, there's kind of two versions of the stories that ISPs tell. And, you know, I said earlier that, you know, there's not much competition right now in home internet, but, you know, there are some signs that it's picking up, especially as new wireless technologies are developed. But you know, it's still moving pretty slowly. But the, you know, when I talk to small ISPs, what they say, you know, the regulations that they want changed in order to get more access to the market, you know, they're not saying let's get rid of net neutrality. What they want is to make it easier for them to access infrastructure like telephone poles that they need to string their fiber optic cables along. They need, you know, easier ways to get access to public right-of-ways. You know, it's things like that need to change in order to and more competition.
FCC Chairman Pai says that this would allow consumers more choice, that we would be able to pick more plans that would fit my needs. I won't need all of that internet bandwidth if I don't use Netflix and other programs. I just check my email every once in a while. Clint?
Well, I mean, yeah, in some of those cases, I'm wondering, you know, are these choices people actually want to make? Do they want to make a choice between having Netflix or having Hulu at the carrier level instead of just deciding, you know, which one they want to pay for individually?
We'll see what kind of plans come out of this eventually. But the case for it is you know, it's not stuff that I hear consumers asking for. I mean, no one's asking for a truncated internet plan for the most part.
Yeah, but it seems to contrast what we have to do with cable. You know, we have to buy all these channels that we don't ever watch, and that, you know, they're saying you have no choice. So the cable companies, which are also our internet provider companies, seem to be selling two different products using two different philosophies, and you would think that should be more synced up. Our phone lines are open. If you got a question or a comment about what's happening with net neutrality, are you concerned that net neutrality's loss would be a disservice to you and your family and your business and the nation, our national competitiveness? Do you think that you have questions about the process? Do you think it's been fair? What about all these bots? And some of them have been fake, who have been posting on the FCC site saying they want the end of net neutrality. Are you concerned about the openness and transparency and how these decisions have been made? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this quick break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Went to break talking about these bots, and they were some fake posts on the FCC site on weighing in on what somebody wants to happen with net neutrality. To find out more about that, Luis over at UTSA, tell us more.
Well, basically, what's happened apparently is that more than a million comments were submitted through the FCC website that were against net neutrality, were in favor of the chairman's proposal. But a lot of those comments are coming not only from fake individuals, but from individuals who hadn't actually made those comments. So this is essentially an instance of identity theft. And the New York Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, is trying to investigate what happened here, because it affects a lot of thousands of New Yorkers, and the FCC won't cooperate. So even the process that has led up to the rule that the FCC will vote for on the 14th is definitely under a cloud, I would say.
So when we have the chairman of the FCC saying there's going to be transparency into the future about how these giant telecoms are going to operate and how they're going to do things, how are we supposed to accept him at his word when we can't even get transparency about how the FCC is going to make those decisions? So Clint Finley at Wired Magazine, is that a concern?
Yeah, it is. I mean, Chairman Pai has promised more transparency out of the FCC, and in some ways he's followed up on that by doing things like releasing the text of orders like this net neutrality order in advance of them being voted upon. Though, if he's not willing to actually listen to public input that calls into question the actual value of that transparency. But there's other areas where the agency has not been very transparent. One of the other issues is that the National Hispanic Media Coalition requested copies of all of the net neutrality related complaints that the FCC had received over the past 2 years, the FCC was only willing to hand over a small sample of those. They argue that the rules aren't needed, but we don't really, the public doesn't even really have a fully informed view of what sorts of issues have already been raised.
Let's go back to the phone lines with Sean. And Sean, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to mention one thing that frustrates me about the current conversation with net neutrality is that there's this idea that current regulations are hurting consumers while because they're stifling growth and they're stifling diversity in plans. You talked earlier about how, well, maybe I only check email and so I don't need all the bandwidth. Well, you can currently pay for a lower bandwidth plan. If that's all you need, you already have that choice. What getting rid of net neutrality regulations does is it allows ISP companies to offer truncated plans that provide less and cost less But the only way it's an advantage is if they can make you pay more for plans that already exist for the entirety of the internet. It's not good for the consumer, and it's frustrating to me that there's this from Chairman Pai talking about how this is good for the consumer, when to me it's a blatant lie. It's misdirection. It's not benefiting the consumer. It's benefiting the ISP, and that's blatantly obvious.
All right, Sean, thank you for that comment. I'm going to go to the next caller, Darwin. Darwin, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. I had one quick question. So you know, a big player that's coming on the scene now that I see in Austin and San Antonio is Google Fiber. So my question is, would someone like that have to adhere to the, let's say, net neutrality guide? Would they be required to have to offer different plans for different services?
All right, Darwin, thanks for the call. San Antonio's internet scene, we have now Spectrum, we also have AT&T, and now we Google Fiber is coming into the market, but in a limited fashion. Luis, what does that mean?
Well, if Google Fiber is going to behave like any other internet service provider, then they would be governed by the same rules as the other ISPs. So they wouldn't. Nobody would require these ISPs to offer differentiated plans according to content. It would just be a choice that a lot of them would probably exercise. I mean, hopefully, Google Fiber, since Google is a supporter of net neutrality, hopefully Google Fiber wouldn't come out with these tiered plans or do anything that would violate the principles of net neutrality. But it is, you know, a corporation out to make money, so you never know.
And Clint, is that they're supposed to say, do no evil? Isn't that what they're supposed to live by?
Yeah, I think that's that was Google's motto. Though I'm not sure if they even still claim that. But yeah, and that's right. You know, they would just be regulated or not regulated, as the case may be, the same way Charter or AT&T are.
Okay, let's go to Edgar on the line. Edgar, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks. I agree with all the other commenters. We know that they're going to start charging us more. This is a lot like the AT&T thing, and it's kind of ridiculous that we constantly have to make comments to our government. They ignore us. I'd also just like to make one quick reminder that we taxpayers already gave Time Warner and Spectrum and all of them huge tax breaks to put in the infrastructure, which they now monopolize. It's a monopoly, much like Southwestern, Bell, and AT&T were a few years ago. We don't have any choices in San Antonio, and we need more. Thanks. I'll get off the line and listen to the reaction.
All right, Edgar, thank you for that. Also, a lot of these internets, they're using public spectrum. They're using our public right-of-way as they put in their fiber and other issues. So, JASIC, do you think that these companies should be held to a standard that they are providing a public service?
Yeah, I mean, I think at a certain level, except the internet is kind of the, you know, it's an open system that was kind of designed to be, you know, accessible by all. I mean, that's been the major innovation in the last 20 years, and I think the companies are making plenty of dollars today and in the future, offering services, whether it's pure bandwidth, and I think it's, you know, looking at it from a pure, you know, competitive capitalist point of view, you know, it behooves them, I think, to look at the situation at large and say, hey, if I want to gain more consumers of my products, you know, there's different things that they could do to innovate and compete against the Netflixes and others and offer services. So I think it becomes one of those situations where let's open it up. If AT&T wants to grow revenue beyond what they have today, because it's a flat, you know, let's say it's a flat business, they can't make that much more money on their internet connectivity, then there should be other ideas, other businesses. And I think this is part of business world. And I think that's the competitive landscape. This is kind of how it really how it should work. But the core internet, which is really owned by nobody, I think should be left, as you mentioned, you know, public service. It's basically, you know, something that is critical to everybody's life. not just in the United States, but around the world. So,
and so, Luis, you know, we know information is power. We certainly saw that in the last election cycle, how people were able to use information in order to gain power, or misinformation. And now these big telecoms will have the ability to choke off certain information and pump other information. Is that a power that we can trust?
I don't think it's a power we can trust, because these companies have misused this power in the past. There have been instances where companies like Comcast, for example, a few years ago was caught slowing down the connections for people who are using the BitTorrent client, which is a peer-to-peer file uploading and downloading system.
Comcast was choking out Netflix until Netflix ponied up.
And the same thing with Verizon as well. There was an instance in 2007 when Verizon censored a texting campaign by NARO, the pro-choice organization, because it found the content distasteful. There was a case in Canada where a telecom company censored the website of the union that was challenging them. So these companies, so there are enough cases out there of companies either slowing down or blocking content or favoring one type of content over another that we can say, no, we shouldn't trust these companies with all this power.
And so Clint Finley, even with comments coming from Pi at a recent event in Washington, D.C., saying that the real threat to the is Twitter, Facebook, with their political activism, it's kind of worrisome, don't you think?
I do find that worrisome. But I mean, and that ties back to net neutrality, though, because those companies will be able to cement their position even further if they're allowed to pay for prioritized service on a network. Those companies are the ones that are going to be able to win in a situation where it's pay to play. So when he's trying to sort of change the topic over to these other companies, at the same time that he's saying, oh, the government should stay out of the internet. And then he wants to kind of say, oh, the internet is actually, these internet companies are actually kind of terrible. Look at what they're doing. It just doesn't really add up to a coherent argument, in my view.
So the big question will be, if the FCC does repeal the net neutrality rules, if this is something that will directly impact consumers to a point where one party will have to own this, and if they'll be held accountable in upcoming elections. I want to thank all of our guests talking about net neutrality today. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.